Philadelphia's 99th mayor, Jim Kenney, will be inaugurated into office on Monday, January 4th. In advance of that transition, NewsWorks Tonight is embarking on a series looking at the legacy of outgoing mayor Michael Nutter. First, let's assess city development. And for that, I'm joined by Inga Saffron of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Plan Philly's Jared Bray. Inga, Jared, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Inga, how about offering a refresher on what Mayor Nutter inherited 8 years ago?
When Michael Nutter was campaigning for mayor way, way back then, planning and zoning were very, very big issues because the street administration had gotten a reputation for pay-to-play for developers and lawyers and various other people making campaign contributions in the hope of getting some favorable treatment. And the planning and zoning system looked very, very broken. And Michael Nutter campaigned very strongly and very effectively on saying he was going to fix that and to professionalize the zoning board and the planning board and the historical commission. And his first public speech upon taking office was a policy statement about planning.
And in the ensuing years, what grade would you give him on that specific metric of eliminating pay for play or professionalizing the development?
Well, I think without a doubt, this is one of the most ethical administrations that I've seen. So I give him A for doing things in a professional way and not favoring people because they gave campaign contributions. It's really been an amazing transformation. I would give him a much lower grade for effective planning, zoning, and preservation because the great sad irony is the results are almost the same in many cases. Even though they're done ethically, even though the process is better in many respects, the end results of these developments, they look a lot like they looked before.
Jared, I see you nodding your head, presumably in assent with what much of Inga is saying. To what extent do we factor in, though, that 1 year after taking office, Philadelphia, like much of the nation, was in the throes of a recession? Did that complicate or set back any well-intentioned plans that Mayor Nutter had?
I actually think that in terms of being able to rewrite the zoning code and make some of the planning policy changes that he wanted to make, the fact that development sort of slowed down a lot during that period helped them put together policies more quickly because, you know, in the middle of a building boom, people don't want to start changing stuff around, changing laws around. So I think that in terms of actually being able to set out some policies with the space to do that and you're not getting anybody's way, the recession was helpful. But now that it's the construction industry is huge right now, and now that it's come back, I think that people are starting to be able to test whether or not the policies, the new zoning code and things like that are actually creating better results. And I think Inga's right that in terms of the actual design of buildings and the way they interact with the street, I don't know if the zoning code change has actually improved those specific outcomes.
Let's get into some specifics. But first, Inga, how do a mayor's policies make their way down to the level of individual developments?
Well, the mayor obviously makes appointments to the main boards, planning, zoning, historical, the art commission. And, that's a very powerful way to influence the results. And the mayor has done this. And one of the good things that Mayor Nutter has done is that he's included a lot more capable professional people on these boards. I think in previous administrations, the appointments were kind of political rewards because some of them are paid quite well or they were just kind of a joke. So he's definitely influenced the outcome. But I think a lot of decisions get made in-house and not necessarily on boards. And a lot of those decisions are influenced by the administration's political and policy outlook.
Jared, some put in that category as kind of a joke the well-intentioned efforts to date of the land bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the land bank came into existence through, just a fitful process of city council negotiations. So people know land bank is supposed to help get vacant properties back into productive use. But city council had to fight over it for quite a long time before it was actually passed. And it's been 2 years since it was actually adopted. And it hasn't taken in any vacant land or sold
any. And they've spent how much?
And they've spent, I'm not sure exactly how much, but it's a couple million dollars at this point, and it's been, it's been 2 years.
Hasn't moved any land yet?
It hasn't moved any land yet.
I actually heard an old-time city official say to me that the land bank is the biggest boondoggle he's ever seen in the history of Philadelphia. That may be a little too harsh, but it is pretty shocking that it's taking so long to get up to speed and that their main concern has been working out the contract negotiations with the employees.
Are those the main drags on implementation?
The contract negotiations were the main thing that was slowing down, or at least that was the chief excuse over the last several months at least. Last month, I think, they wrapped up the labor negotiations, and so theoretically they're in a position to start actually doing what the land bank is supposed to be doing at this point. And in the next couple of months, I think there's like 60 test properties that they're going to try to take through various methods to get back into developers' hands or as side gardens or community gardens or whatever they want.
To your knowledge, has Mayor-elect Kenney declared that he's on board with moving that program forward?
I think all of the candidates during this primary season said, yes, we'll try to make the land bank as good as we can, but I don't think anybody has taken any ownership of it. Never really took ownership of it, I wouldn't say, and I'm not sure Kenney will either, but we'll see what happens.
The land bank is kind of symptomatic of so many well-intentioned policies, like the zoning code reform. I was a strong proponent of it. I thought it was really important, really necessary. And so the city has done it, and yet not all that much has changed. And the registered community organizations, that was also a great innovation. Impact, very little. Civic design review, great idea, but very little impact.
I'm starting to wonder if we're giving a mayor too much credit for the ability to come up with and then implement ideas along this regard.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way the system really works is that the market has a lot to do with dictating what's going to happen and what's not going to happen, and the mayor can either be a good steward of whatever kind of market he wants to have, or he can screw things up. I would add something to what Inga was saying, though, and I think that even though we can't really point to specific zoning policies or specific planning appointments that might have had really direct, tangible outcomes that we want, I think that the fact that, when Nutter came into office, there had been this report from the Building Industry Association called If We Fix It, They Will Come, and it was all about fixing the zoning code as a way to help the construction industry. And the fact that the zoning code went the way it did, I think that a lot of different people, from developers to community groups, architects, planners, a lot of these people came to the table and felt like their ideas and their concerns were actually being considered. And I think that some of that sense is still around now, that people think that even if something's not working specifically well for them, they feel like they have some skin in the game and they have some impact on the process, I would say.
The RCO system has introduced a process in which civic,
RCO,
registered community organizations, has introduced a process where that mandates that neighborhood groups get a say. Their feelings about them are taken into consideration. So there definitely is a process, and that is mandatory. But I think a lot of neighborhood groups still feel they're not being heard as much as they would like. There's still councilmanic prerogative, which is this system where members of city council can introduce a bill to change the zoning of a site. Everyone will vote in lockstep. Just to give you one example, there's a site in South Kensington neighborhood, just north of Girard, very large full block site. A developer came with a proposal, negotiated with the neighborhood group, came to terms, signed a proviso, and then Council President Clark rezoned the site. The property was flipped to another developer who just basically threw out the proviso. And what was so disappointing about that was that in the original agreement, the developer agreed to include streets through this full block site and a public space that would have been accessible to everyone in the neighborhood. New developer comes along, eliminates the streets that would have broken up this super block into more manageable bits, eliminates the public space, but councilmanic prerogative already rezoned the site. That developer didn't need the neighborhood to agree to anything. It was a by right development.
Now, in fairness, though, what are the theoretical advantages of councilmanic prerogative?
Well, so I can give you a flip story, which is kind of also something near and dear to my heart. And that was a University City High School site, 14 acres. All of it acquired through eminent domain, through leveling an African-American neighborhood in the 60s, a really sad, tragic story of a destruction of a neighborhood. At that time of urban renewal, the high school was built as kind of compensation to the neighborhood. So during the whole crisis in the school district where they had to close and sell a lot of schools, that was one of the schools for sale. It was bought by a partnership of Drexel University and a developer called Wexford. It was sold with no restrictions, 14 acres taken from people, from small individuals. The city imposed no planning restrictions at all on that sale. This is publicly owned land. And I will say, Councilwoman Janie Blackwell stepped in and used her prerogative to say, I'm not going to let this sale go through unless you listen to the neighborhood and make, you know, this change and that change. And, you know, Janie Blackwell isn't particularly known for her progressive stance, but, you know, I really applaud her for being the bulwark against this going through with no strings attached.
Several neighborhoods have experienced rapid gentrification. Let's head out to, for example, Port Fishington. And is that an example that, in part, we can attribute to the work of Michael Nutter?
I wouldn't do that. No, I wouldn't. I think that what's happened up in Fishtown and Port Richmond and Northern Liberties and Kensington, I think is the four component parts of that name you just said, has had a lot to do with not just you know, the real estate market following itself, but nearness to transit hubs, subway stops. I think that's been the biggest draw up there. And I think that Nutter has actually missed an opportunity to capture some of that by allowing some more density around transit stops, subway stations, and all that. I wouldn't say that that particular part of the city has grown because of what Nutter's done. Would you, Inga?
I think you have to remember that virtually every big city and many medium-sized cities in America is seeing this kind of rapid development. We're experiencing a back-to-the-city boom like we haven't seen ever before. And Philadelphia was well-positioned for that, you know, its location, its transit, its intact neighborhoods. I think it's the market. And, you know, the Nutter administration has been very pro-development, and they've let it happen. Mm-hmm. It's been very laissez-faire. And while there's some good in that, you know, it's great to see the city's revival. There's so many instances where we could have better development,
right,
if the mayor in City Hall would use his or her authority, the authority of the office, to demand better quality design, better urban design. But we haven't seen that happen.
I think if I could just add something, I think that there's been this perception among city officials over the years that they're just desperate for any type of development they can get, that Philadelphia was on the brink of like just being cleared out completely at the end of the 1980s. And so anytime anybody wants to build anything here, they're just like, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that sort of attitude needs to evolve into, well, you know, we're not just going to take anything and be thankful for it anymore. But I don't think it has yet. I think there's still sort of at the end of this attitude that any development is good.
Back to transit for a moment. And I'm looking right outside our studio here. And with that, let's talk about bike infrastructure. It's blossomed. Do we credit Nutter, at least in large part, for developing that?
Yeah, I think we do. I think the mayor deserves props for expanding the bike lane network. And the bike lanes on Spruce and Pine in particular were really transformative. And that's changed drivers' attitudes about bicyclists. And the introduction of bike share has been a huge success. I also think the mayor deserves a lot of credit for parks, for renovating parks, for adding new parks, or supporting temporary parks. I think this has really been a golden age of park building. So that's really important because those kinds of amenities are so necessary as the city's population increases again. People want places to go and socialize, and the city has to provide them high quality parks to stay competitive.
I think that's also one area where Nutter's, you know, move to professionalize some of the planning agencies has actually had real benefits, because I think his Office of Transportation and Utilities, which is sort of in charge of planning bike infrastructure and all that, has been allowed to just do its work, and it hasn't had to have a lot of political interference from the administration, at least. It's been allowed to just go out and look at where would be a good place to put a bike lane and then do it, until halfway through Nutter's term, City Council took back the power to actually place bike lanes in areas where it was going to take away some parking. So there's been some pushback from council, but I think that Nutter has let offices like the Office of Transportation and Utilities just do their jobs.
In fact, he did stand up to the critics early on when members of city council were calling him Mr. Bike Lane and making fun of him, and didn't realize how enlightened and progressive that policy was. And he pushed through regardless of those critics, which, you know, good for him.
Jared Inga, there's been talk and some movement on revitalizing both North Broad and East Market streets, though both of those areas are far from being transformed. To what extent can we give Nutter credit and or blame for these corridors to date?
Well, I actually think that East Market is about to take off any second now.
It's on the launch pad.
It's on the launch pad. I think this the development that's being called East Market, which is between 11th and 12th, is going to be incredibly transformative. It's a massive development of shops and residential and offices. There's going to be a grocery there. And I think every property on that block is in play because developers are just waiting for that to come online. And East Market Street is going to be such a different place.
Jared, by contrast, take us out to North Broad.
Actually, I would just add something to what Inga was saying just a second ago, that I think that maybe Nutter deserves a little bit of credit for East Market, but I think that former Councilman Frank DiCicco and current Councilman Mark Squilla have paid like a lot of attention to that area of the city and have tried to craft some policies that will help development there. On North Broad, I think almost all of the Nutter administration's attention has been focused on the Divine Lorraine Hotel, which was empty for 15 years and is now actually being renovated. Alan Greenberger, who's the deputy mayor for economic development, has been promising for, I don't know, 5 years that he personally is going to make sure that something happens to that building.
That is their really big preservation triumph.
Yeah. Yeah.
It won't be a hotel, multi-purpose.
It'll be rental apartments and restaurants, yeah.
Yeah. I think, though, that the redevelopment of the Divine Lorraine will launch a huge development push mm-hmm. along North Broad. Actually, you can see signs already. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some buildings that have been renovated for student apartments. I saw a shiny new bar mm-hmm. south of Girard. I think it's happening, and I see a lot of for sale signs on buildings. So I think it's about to pop, too.
I think between that and the Reading Viaduct Park, mm-hmm. which they're going to create, which is pretty close to North Broad Street, I think those two things. Between that, which is that maybe Vine and the Divine Lorraine, which is up on Fairmount, it's going to be a different world altogether. And then north of that to Temple, you know, That whole area is going to develop like crazy too. I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
Especially if they get a football stadium.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens with that. But
Lastly, I'd like to ask each of you in turn, in regard to work left undone, if you had the potential to do so, what might you prioritize for Mayor-elect Jim Kenney in terms of development? Jared.
I just wrote a story this morning, actually. I didn't write it this morning. It came out this morning about Nutter's preservation legacy. And I think that there has been a lot of work that didn't get done during the last 8 years in terms of protecting some of the city's most important landmarks, and not just its most important landmarks, but it's, you know, it's sort of the vernacular architecture of the neighborhoods. I think that especially during a building boom, which has occurred during the latter half of Nutter's career as mayor, there needs to be really thoughtful attention paid to the city's historic resources, and I don't know that all that attention has been paid.
Inga?
Well, I totally agree with that. And I thought the point that Jared made in his story about other cities spending way more money on preservation was really telling. So I would like to add to that is that I think we need to revisit the tax abatement. It's been a very powerful tool, and it's definitely fueled a lot of this new housing development, but it's a very crude tool. And when you're giving out abatements to people spending, you know, $2 million on a house, I mean, that's just crazy, or $10 million on a condo, I think we could refine the tax abatement and we could use it to support preservation and support other goals that we have, investment in neighborhoods that haven't seen a lot of investment. So I think we need to have a more targeted tax abatement, and I would love to see the Kenney administration make that a priority.
Inga, Jared, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Inga Saffron of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Plan Philly's Jared Bray. Upcoming episodes in our series focusing on the legacy of Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter will take up taxes, as Inga Saffron just mentioned, in addition to sustainability, business in the economy, crime, poverty, and livability.